I'm Veronica Dudo. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, military buildup, the U.S. presence in the Middle East is growing, what it could mean for Iran. A former prince in the United Kingdom is now in police custody, what Andrew Mountbatten Windsor is accused of. And the Holy See will not take part in President Trump's Board of Peace, what that could mean for relations with the U.S. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us. Our top story tonight. Tensions are rising between the U.S. and Iran. President Trump has issued new threats against the regime after a second round of nuclear talks ended without a significant breakthrough. A U.S. strike force is now in the area, raising the odds that a strike could be imminent. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales joins us now. Eric, this is a serious situation we've been watching. What more can you tell us?
Oh, I tell you what, Veronica, this is a very serious situation. The United States is sending the most air power to the Middle East since the 2003 Iraq invasion. It's still unclear whether President Trump will order airstrikes against Iran. And if he does, whether they will be aimed at Iran's already damaged nuclear program, wipe out its missile force, or even try to topple the government. But the White House press secretary, Caroline Leavitt, made it clear that Iran is on borrowed time.
Diplomacy is always his first option, and Iran would be very wise to make a deal with President Trump and with this administration.
The Ayatollahs need to understand that the president means business. They must dismantle any remaining nuclear program. They must stop developing ballistic missiles, and we need to bring stability to the region.
The Ayatollah has fired back with strong words if a strike takes place, posting on X, quote, "A warship is a dangerous piece of military hardware. However, more dangerous than that warship is the weapon that can send that warship to the bottom of the sea." Also, Iran and Russia announced joint naval drills in the Sea of Oman to deter any unilateral action in the region. And Russia warned that any U.S. strike on Iran would have serious consequences. But Republicans tell me Iran doesn't have options.
We're in position. Obviously, that's a pretty imposing position to the Iranian leadership. They know what's going on. They're making comments that are just, you know, futile and have no backing.
I think Iran has been put on notice. So I think they have to be very careful. I mean, they're killing, what, thousands of their own people over there with the upheaval and the demonstrations that are taking place. The Iranian people want to see change.
Democrats say Iran must end its nuclear program at the very least.
Iran needs to recognize that it has been a malign influence throughout the region, abandon its nuclear program totally.
Intelligence Committee Vice Chair Senator Mark Warner tells me he supports the president's efforts, but thinks our allies may not go along.
He's not going to be able to bring the kind of united world to this off against this awful regime that I think could have been brought to bear even a few months ago.
One thing's for sure, Iran is definitely going to be a hot-button topic when lawmakers return next week. Several House members say that they intend to force a vote on a war powers resolution. And Senator Tim Kaine is also considering the same thing in the Senate. Now, but previous efforts, we have to remember, to claw back congressional war-making powers have come up a bit short this year. Most recently with the United States military operations in Venezuela. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
I want to bring in retired Vice Admiral Robert Moret. Now, you were a career intelligence officer in the U.S. Navy, serving in assignments throughout the Pacific, Europe, and the Middle East. From your experience, when's the last time you saw the scale of air power build up in the Middle East?
Well, certainly a great question, Veronica. I mean, based on press reports, it looks as if it's one of the largest buildups we've had, certainly in terms of air power and maritime assets in the Middle East for some time, harkening back to Operation Iraqi Freedom, or perhaps even not quite as much as Desert Storm. So a big force package that hopefully will just be used for deterrent effects. We'll have to see what kinds of options, decision-making options, come out of the White House in the days and weeks ahead.
Now, looking back on history, has America ever built up a military force like this and not done something?
Probably not, although I'd caution against putting too much weight on that. I mean, the whole purpose of having this kind of, you know, military pressure on any potential adversary, in this case Iran, is hopefully to come some kind of a diplomatic solution. And I think most people hope that that'll be the case here as well. And of course, we've had negotiations with senior parts of the Iranian government as recently as a couple of days ago this week in Geneva.
What are the possible aims for military action in Iran?
Yeah, Veronica, great question. I put them into four categories. I think the four are, first, their nuclear weapons, the enrichment that they're doing of uranium and so forth, and getting them to stop that and to agree to inspections by the United Nations or some other parties. The second category is ballistic missile capabilities, which we would like to try, certainly because of the threat that they pose to not just our own forces in the region, but also our regional partners, who are a vital part of the discussion. The third category I'd have are the surrogates, as they are called, or the axis of resistance, but all the proxies that they have throughout the Middle East that do their bidding. And the fourth category, which is the most challenging one, perhaps, would be the regime itself. And if we want to take on the regime and target leadership elements that exist in Tehran and other places to try to get them to have some kind of a transition to their government. So I put them into those four categories, and they all would call for very different target sets and different types of military operations.
If military action does happen, what kind of response could we expect from Iran's leaders? And also, are you concerned about any of their nuclear capabilities?
I'm not concerned about their nuclear capability yet. I mean, I'm concerned about possibilities they have. They do have some highly enriched fissible material, which is in storage, but they are not in a position to deliver a nuclear weapon at this time, although it's still very concerning. The other kind of responses they could give, of course, would be to hazard U.S. forces in the region directly or indirectly, whether they're based in regional countries or at sea and all the naval assets we've got. And the third thing they could do is empower their, as I mentioned, their surrogates in the region, you know, the Houthis, surrogates that they have in Iraq, probably not so much as Hamas and Hezbollah because they've been so attrited in the recent months, but they could activate a lot of their proxies and create trouble for us.
Admiral Robert Moret, thank you.
It's good to be with you, Veronica. Best wishes.
President Trump says there's peace in the Middle East, but at the same time, he warns now is the time for Iran to join us. He says Iran cannot continue to threaten the stability of the entire region, and if Iran doesn't make a deal, bad things will happen. The president made his comments on that and much more during a meeting of the new Board of Peace in Washington, D.C. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen.
Veronica, today, President Donald Trump's Board of Peace meeting for the very first time here in the nation's capital. Now, it was originally part of the plan to end the fighting in Gaza. And today, billions of dollars pledged in the pursuit of lasting peace.
This is a big day.
President Donald Trump addresses officials from nearly 50 countries.
What we're doing is very simple. Peace. It's called the Board of Peace, and it's all about an easy word to say, but a hard word to produce, peace.
That proving especially true with Iran. President Trump says the U.S. is having good talks with Iran.
It's proven to be, over the years, not easy to make a meaningful deal with Iran. We have to make a meaningful deal, otherwise bad things happen.
And the clock could be winding down fast.
So now we may have to take it a step further, or we may not. Maybe we're going to make a deal. You're going to be finding out over the next probably 10 days.
Also on the agenda, Gaza. Nine members pledging a combined $7 billion towards relief in Gaza, with five countries agreeing to deploy an international stabilization force. U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio says there's still a long ways to go in Gaza.
We have to get this right. There is no Plan B for Gaza. Plan B is going back to war. No one here wants that.
President Trump also announced the U.S. is pledging $10 billion for the Board of Peace, but did not specify what the money will be used for. President Trump wants to work closely with the United Nations. He says it has great potential, but it has not lived up to it.
Someday I won't be here. The United Nations will be, I think, is going to be much stronger, and the Board of Peace is going to almost be looking over the United Nations.
His vice president spoke as well at the U.S. Institute of Peace. J.D. Vance says peace also creates prosperity.
The economies here represent millions of American jobs of people who are receiving products built in American factories and made by American workers would not be possible without a focus on peace. So, Mr. President, while I think this is great for the world, I also think it's really, really great for the United States of America.
Now, Germany, Italy, Norway, Switzerland, and the UK are among the countries that have not joined President Donald Trump's Board of Peace, but they are taking part as observers. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
Despite an invitation issued in January to Pope Leo XIV to join the board, a representative from the Holy See was not present at the meeting. Cardinal Pietro Parolin, Vatican Secretary of State, said yesterday that the Holy See will not participate due to the board's, quote, particular nature. The cardinal added that one of the points on which the Holy See has long insisted is that on the international level, the United Nations should manage these types of situations. The White House responded to the news last night.
I think it's deeply unfortunate. I don't think that peace should be partisan or political or controversial. And of course, the administration wants all those who were invited to join the Board of Peace to join. Because again, the Board of Peace is overseeing the reconstruction of a territory that has been plagued with violence, with bloodshed, with poverty for far too long.
Joining us now from Rome is EWTN senior Vatican analyst Frank Rocca. Frank, thank you so much for your time.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Now, Cardinal Pietro Parolin, the Vatican Secretary of State, announced that the Holy See will not participate in the Board of Peace promoted by U.S. President Donald Trump to address Gaza and other conflicts. How would you explain the Vatican's decision?
Well, he was a little vague. He said that there were certain points they were perplexed about that they wanted to clarify. But he did say one specific thing. He said, we believe that above all that the United Nations should be the place where these crises are addressed. So he emphasized that and was clear about that.
Now, what is it about the UN that seems to be so important to the Vatican?
Well, you know, last month in Rome, Pope Leo spoke to the assembled ambassadors, and he said that he was particularly concerned about the breakdown in multilateralism recently. And he said that the United Nations, and specifically, came out of the ashes of the Second World War and gave away for peace and development. The Holy See has been very supportive of the United Nations from the beginning, and you know, four popes have spoken there, and John Paul spoke there twice. We could expect that sooner or later Leo will. I always remember that private secretary of Pope John the 23rd said that, in fact, John the 23rd got the idea for the Second Vatican Council from the UN, that the people got together after the war to talk, and that he was inspired by that, at least in part, to call the Second Vatican Council. So that gives you an idea of the appeal of the UN to the Holy See.
It is interesting because having open lines of communication, conversations, it certainly can be helpful. And so this very much seems to be like shutting the door. But also, we heard from the White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt. She commented on the Vatican's decision not to join the Board of Peace, calling it deeply unfortunate and saying she doesn't believe peace should be partisan or political or controversial. What could this mean for U.S. relations with the Holy See?
Well, you know, Cardinal Pizzaballo, the Latin Patriarch of Jerusalem, who also has a big say in this, specifically to do with Gaza, he said that the Board of Peace was a colonialist operation that was not taking the Gazan people, the Palestinians' views in account. So, yes, this will be another stress point in the relations between the Vatican and the Trump administration. There's no question about it. Another one has been, obviously, migration. The Pope and the U.S. bishops have spoken about this and obviously different from the Trump administration's approach. And we just learned today that the Pope who will not be going to the United States this year, or the 250th anniversary of the United States, will be going to Lampedusa on July 4th. And Lampedusa is an island in the southern Mediterranean that's associated with the migrant crisis in Europe, and where Pope Francis spoke some years ago. So we can expect the symbolism of that to also be underscoring another point of tension between the Vatican and the White House. And we expect that will be on several issues.
Frank Rocca, EWTN senior Vatican analyst, thank you so much.
Thank you.
The Commission of Fine Arts has approved President Trump's White House East Wing renovation plan. Six of the seven members voted in favor of the project. The seventh didn't vote because he was the initial architect of the project. President Trump decided in October to demolish the East Wing in order to build a ballroom. The National Trust for Historic Preservation has sued to halt construction. A court decision in the case is pending. The former Prince of England, Andrew Mountbatten-Windsor, was arrested today over information he allegedly shared with Jeffrey Epstein. Police are reviewing reports that the 66-year-old sent confidential trade reports to Epstein in 2010. That's when the former prince was Britain's special envoy for international trade. He was released 11 hours later under investigation, meaning he has neither been charged nor exonerated. Mountbatten-Windsor was forced to give up his royal duties over his ties to Epstein, who was arrested on sex trafficking charges in 2019. We have a lot more still to come on EWTN News Nightly. Major turnout. Cardinal Supich celebrates an outdoor Ash Wednesday Mass just a short distance from a local detention center that gained national attention. We talked to the priest who was there. And the Trump administration is giving ICE broader powers. We have the latest. Welcome back. The Trump administration is expanding ICE's ability to detain thousands of legally admitted refugees who have not yet obtained green cards. This is according to a new government memo released on Wednesday, which cites national security concerns and the need to ensure refugees undergo additional screening. The guidance also allows immigration officers to arrest and detain refugees who have failed to adjust to lawful permanent resident status 1 year after being admitted to the U.S. In Illinois, a large turnout for an Ash Wednesday Mass and procession. It was led by Chicago Cardinal Blaise Supich. He celebrated Mass, then led a procession to the Broadview Detention Center. The site gained attention during the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Operation Midway Blitz, aimed at arresting illegal immigrants with criminal records. Joining us now is Father Leandro Fossa from Our Lady of Mount Carmel in Melrose Park, Illinois. Father, you attended the Mass and procession. Can you tell us more about the turnout and the overall feeling?
Yes, I attended the Mass and procession. It was in my parish. I'm the pastor of Our Lady of Mount Carmel in Melrose Park. Cardinal decided to be with us because we wanted to do a Mass and procession in front of the Scalabrini Center and support our families who are being affected by these immigration raids. The Scalabrini Center that is present at Melrose Park in this church of Mount Carmel was founded by the missionaries of St. Charles Borromeo Scalabrinians to assist migrants and refugees. When we started more than 100 years ago, we assisted the Italian migrants that came to America. And then in the 60s, 70s, we started serving all the migrants. And specifically nowadays, in the Chicago area, we focus in this area with the Latino population.
How were you received at the detention facility?
Very well. We were received by the agency that is taking care and providing security to the detention facility. We were very welcomed. The treatment was very good. We were let in and we waited for those who were captured yesterday. So we had the opportunity to do a celebration of ashes and communion, and also the officer in charge, the manager, he allowed us, if anyone wanted to attend confession, he could, or he or she could. And yes, we offer that service, so inside the detention.
Now, as the Lenten season has begun, what message are you sharing with the local community and the faithful around the world?
We are sharing the message that Pope Leo started the Lenten season with. We need to listen to one another. When we listen to people, when we dialogue, when we create community, we realize that not everyone is a criminal. Besides every person's story, there is a person. There is God's creation. So we may avoid a lot of mistakes of targeting everyone. So in this world that is so modernized by AI, by different means of communication, We need more people who are courageous enough to communicate one-on-one, to journey together, to listen to the stories of people, to know who is your neighbor. And being a good Christian, that's a call that we are asked by Pope Leo at this moment. And we know the reality of migrants and here in Merrill's Park and the Archdiocese of Chicago. Many have been here for a long, long time, more than 20 years. So yes, they might not have papers, but they have been in the community for so long. Are they still criminals? Can we have a process that is more humane in their case, since they have children and grandchildren in some situations that reside here already? They come to our parishes, they attend our communities. So the message is to get closer and know our community.
Father Frosta, thank you.
You are welcome.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, winning streak. Guess which retailer just broke the winning streak for the world's largest company? Plus, learn how the work of St. Carlo Acutis is getting an upgrade. Welcome back. For the first time, Amazon dethroned Walmart as the company with the largest annual revenue thanks to $717 billion in sales last year. For the last 13 years, Walmart had maintained the record but fell $4 billion short last year. Amazon's advantage comes from cloud computing, advertising, and online sales. By contrast, more than 90% of Walmart sales come from its physical stores and websites. While the two companies have competing approaches with artificial intelligence, Amazon significantly stepped up AI investments, while Walmart leaned on tech partnerships. Prospective home buyers are getting some much-needed relief. Mortgage rates have dropped to their lowest level in more than 3 years. According to mortgage buyer Freddie Mac, the average 30-year fixed mortgage sits at just over 6%. Experts call it a favorable lead into the annual spring home buying season. They say dipping below the 6% mark is a key psychological threshold for the housing market that could unleash pent-up buyer demand and boost supply. From an online website to a mobile app, St. Carlo Acutis' compilation of Eucharistic miracles is getting a new upgrade. The St. Carlo Acutis Shrine and Center for Eucharistic Encounter in Malvern, Pennsylvania, launched the app on Valentine's Day. It's called St. Carlo Eucharistic Miracles and chronicles the life of the young Italian saint. Users can interact with a live like Carlo and locates Eucharistic adoration chapels around the world. It was developed in collaboration with Carlo's mother, who said her son loved using technology to speak about Jesus and the Eucharist. We thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, YouTube, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Veronica Dudo. Good night and God bless.